Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
One size fits all seemed like a good idea for clothes. Nice
dress. It's a t-shirt.
Until you tried it on. Same goes for your healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers a variety of flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. So whether you're between jobs, coming off a parent's plan, or even missed open enrollment, you can find the plan that fits you best. Find out more about United Healthcare coverage at uh1.com. That's uh1.com.
Hey everyone, it's Red Men Originals podcast time. I'm Paul Machin. Alongside me is Chris Pager, Chloe Bloxham, and Steve Hoare. Having a
Hello.
What?
The flex.
Oh, go ahead.
Oh. I feel in good place.
If you're listening to this as a podcast and you're wondering why you just felt aroused, like because Steve's just flexed and it was and it's so it. Powerful yes. That it's so powerful.
Sorry.
You know what? You've ruined the moment.
It's like when Nanny McPhee bangs a stick. You know what I mean? You just felt it. Not onto Nanny McPhee. Didn't get a reference there, did you? 3 minutes into a show or whatever. The old Nanny McPhee reference. So cool, aren't
I? If anyone had Nanny McPhee reference in the first 30 seconds of the show, you deserve a prize for that.
If this is your first time with the Red Men Original podcast. This is what it is. Obscure media references.
Are you ever fucked with the wrong arm? I went left arm, I should have went right arm.
Oh, right.
Well, that you're wanking on.
Which is your mouse hand?
Oh, dear.
Right.
Thank you so much for joining us live so far in the chat and all that good stuff. Hiya. You can interact with us. Don't ever touch his hand.
No way. It was the other one as well.
He's just told you wanks with that hand on a Thursday.
It's Monday now. Sorry.
Can we start again?
just end the stream. Fuck off. Let's go. That's it, I'm done. That's enough.
The Reds even won. Usually we do this to stall from having to be miserable. We're actually happy as well.
Yeah.
You've made everyone miserable in the first place.
811 YT in the comments has had Nanny McPhee on my Red Men podcast bet builder. He's now a millionaire. great. Sad. I want to ask a question, actually. We haven't got a podcast kickoff question, but what we were discussing before Steve took it to the gutter was about use and reuse of other players' songs. So there's now a Jota song, which is the Fernando Torres song, and I personally immensely dislike rehashing old players' songs. Normally it's like a bit of a hard and to not on, but also I think it disrespects the player previously. However,
the
Torres bounce thing, it is always a shame that it's not in our
repertoire.
Yeah, not in our repertoire anymore.
You haven't really asked the question there.
We're having a conversation. It's not really a question per se. We're just talking about it.
You literally said
you were going to start with the question.
Yeah,
we were all waiting for the question.
It's why there was an awkward silence that I felt implied to Phil.
Right, sounds okay, cool.
What's the question?
Do you like
How
it?
Do we feel about it?
Oh, yeah, shite.
Sound.
I don't think they should be doing it.
I like it.
I don't mind robbing other people's songs and making a lip. That's what we effectively did quite a lot. But I don't think you should be using the Torres song again.
I do. Can't stand them. Crap. Don't care about them. Let's reuse his song.
He wasn't crap, though. That's
he did become crap, though, didn't he? So
not
that's a big
us.
Fat
lie.
No, not for us. But he binned us off to go Chelsea, so I don't see why we can't use his song again for someone else. His song was good, like, it was incredible.
It was a boss song, and that, like, we're going to bounce in a minute, is sorely missed in the cop, isn't it?
Where do we draw the line?
I don't think you should ever do it.
You can't use Roberto Firmino's song when he leaves.
Why?
I just don't think you can. I don't think you should ever do it.
I'd always put him higher.
What about Suarez's song?
No. Suarez's song. You've just called it Suarez's song. It's
It's different. Suarez was one of the greatest players ever to grace a football pitch.
So is Fernando Torres for us. I think that's different.
Also, I'm talking about ever.
Like the Maxi Rodriguez song is the Maxi Rodriguez song. It's a great tune, but it's a, you need to be more original than just going back. By the way, there's already a good Jota song. He doesn't need another one.
Yeah, I don't know if someone for him again.
It does sound good though. I've not been in an away end where it's been sung. I've seen your video and stuff. It sounds boss. I do agree that he's kind of got a boss song already, and that Jota song, while he's been injured, has been missed. Mm-hmm. You know, yeah. when he's not been in the side, when Firmino's been out and stuff, we've missed him. That's like an atmosphere starter of a song, isn't it? But where I sit on the actual question is probably like, I'd prefer not to, but if it's good, I'll get involved.
I'm not going to not. I'm reluctantly.
See, I just want songs.
I think it's a better version, actually, than the Torres one.
No, Torres was absolutely simply incredible.
Reckon?
Yeah.
The advert.
I like to get took the piss in Goodison Park, but I just think that's funny.
He's fucking boss. He's hard. The second verse is decent. The thing is, there was, I'm pretty sure that was Gakpo's song at PSV that they sung to him. So why don't we make it a Gakpo song instead?
Well, this is part two of like stealing other teams. And there was a guy who emailed me a year ago about the Jota one, that it's Man United have got a song to that tune, which is, oh Christ, it'll come back to me and people can engage caps lock in the comments and shout at me for not knowing the name off the top of my head. It's unfortunate, son. It's another one like that. Anyway, I digress. I like it when we go to the continent and steal our songs rather than nick them from other clubs in the British Isles. So obviously, it's been mentioned in the comments we were talking about before. Patrick here saying we should steal the Jota one off Celtic.
Yep, loved it.
Like they had that Simon Mignolet song at Sunderland. We refused to go anywhere near that.
Don't do that.
The Jota one from Celtic, it gets stuck in my head. Being stuck in my head for 24 hours.
No, it's just not.
I like it.
I think we've got players who deserve it. I feel like we've wasted two songs. Jota got two really good songs now in general. There's a few other lads you could do with a song.
Yeah, Nunes needs James a song. Because Nunes doesn't need a song.
I like the aggressive Nunes.
No, he needs a bit more than that.
He needs to be better at football if he wants to get a proper song.
Yeah. Gakpo deserves
it. It annoys me that when we give songs to players who actually haven't earned them, like Naby Keita had a song before he basically even kicked a fucking football for us.
Had a year to think about it though.
Yeah, I know, yeah. It's bad, it's bad mojo, I think, to give players songs ahead before they do. Like Thiago having his song, Thiago's looking at his song on a phone when he's being announced. Nah, bad you do that. Got it.
It's like when we give Aquilani a banner before he'd even signed.
Yeah, stupid.
Yeah,
didn't work. Stupid. Jay is saying Fernando Torres is one of the greatest strikers of all time. Respect.
Yeah.
And Steve Moore says, Chloe and Steve are like a divorced couple on here today. You couldn't be sat any further apart.
It does feel like a body language, you know. I'm open up.
Okay, let's talk. Okay, don't do that.
I'm glad it was you that said that.
Yeah. let's.
You got a comment on me, Chloe?
No.
It does feel like you're
leaning. You did flex and then make comments and make
I like this because I can get my shoes in the angle. Look, now go back to the other one. Whenever I move my shoe, you can see it.
It's not what you do. Same. Just put it on Chloe. Just put it on Chloe's one. See? Yeah, I'm with
like
you. Yeah,
this the start of
this
the
is our flexing. You know what I mean? There you go. Look at that.
What a mate.
Exceptional audio content.
Gives a leg of shoes.
Check out the video over on YouTube if you listen to this on your podcast app. And while you're on your podcast app, give it a 5-star review. I don't know why you would, because it's basically just been 5 minutes of us showing our shoes to the camera. Right, Liverpool.
Do you pay for that, mate?
Nottingham Forest. I'll
probably give it a 5-star review because they're not watching the video.
Yeah. Nottingham Forest 2. Chris Pajak, we back-to-back wins. Nice.
Yes. It's very good that we were able to get the back-to-back wins, isn't it? I think, you know, immediately after the final whistle, I did the In the Ground podcast and I was a little bit like down on it, to be honest, because, you know, we relied on the set pieces and all that type of stuff. And then by the time I'd got to use, I'd sort of made me peace with that. I was like, you know what? We relied on the set pieces. That's something that we hadn't done for a while. And I was happier by the time I got to you. I think just because I had 5-6 minutes of talking it through to myself and sort of changing my own mind on things. But, you know, it is a bit, to be honest, it's a little bit disappointing with a couple of days now that Leeds were really, really shit. and Nottingham Forest are shit, and we weren't able to do it. And it wasn't quite as it was a little bit more of a disjointed performance, I think, against Nottingham Forest. But this Liverpool side has had so many disjointed performances this season and not managed to win. So there's still positives to be taken out of it.
I agree with that. You know, I've got we/Forest made it harder than it should have been, Chloe, and that's because I think that's fair. I think Liverpool weren't quite at it. It was a similar start to the last couple of games where we were lacking incisiveness. We were just kind of knocking it around, feeling our way into the game. But then, you know, we've done that loads of times in the past and then gone on and won games in second halves and had great seasons. But also, I do think Forest deserve credit. I thought they got in our faces. I thought Awoniyi was a real handful up front. And Forest weren't there to be rolled over as much as we maybe thought they might have been ahead of the game.
No, they could have easily taken something away from that game, and no one really could have argued, because the two goals that we did concede were absolutely shocking goals from a Liverpool perspective. Both came from throw-ins, one where we're not switched on. Nico Williams is just in acres of space down the side. Yeah, he gets fortunate with the deflection, but he's in so much space that, you know, how we weren't switched on originally from that throw-in.
It's how they made it over to that side of the pitch so easily.
Easily, yeah.
It didn't do anything to get over there.
One ball. And then the second one, a long throw-in comes in that we'd been struggling with that entire second half, at least, because in the first half it was a very drab performance. It was very Leeds 25 minutes in, where I thought, not another one of these. And we had loads of possession but didn't have many really, really good chances. And the good chances we did have were from set pieces and crosses. I remember Jota missing one back post like a minute before half time. But in the second half, instead of controlling the game, once we got the goal, it was so open. We were nervous once they'd got the goal, and their second is literally someone winning a flick on, or like us not defending it, getting our heads to it, and Gibbs White is in so much space.
Shout out to their fella taking throw-ins, like he's a fucking slingshot, by the way. Need a run up him, did he?
No. I was about to say, it became in the end, it was a battle of free kicks versus throw-ins. They couldn't defend our set plays. I thought Forrest was mad. I've never seen a team be so good in open play defending and be so diabolically bad at set piece defending. Their defending for all of our goals is really, really poor. On the flip side, they smelled blood, I think, with the throwing thing, and I think Liverpool knew, and we were nervous. And Jürgen even said, we didn't want to get throw-ins away. Yeah. Doesn't help when you're out on the goal. He literally gives a one away for the goal as well, but we just couldn't deal with that. I thought that was the only way Forrest really looked like they were going to score. You mentioned before, I thought they got their game plan wrong first half. They turned up to Anfield and sat back and soaked up pressure. They should have been in our faces.
Yeah.
Because he didn't sniff the ball in the first half. Second half, when they started getting it to him a little bit more and he'd come out, it did cause problems. I felt like they played into our hands the first half, and then they smelt a little bit of blood in the second half as well. So
I think you say that, but the idea is there is our mentality as a crowd's a bit fragile. Yeah. And I think you can get us, and that the atmosphere was fucking rubbish.
Yeah,
and I've seen a lot of like, oh, it needs to be sort of, it's been like that since time immemorial, where in games where Liverpool are supposed to win, even when it's been great in recent years, it's always been crap in those games. But I think they did the right job of helping us get a bit tetchy, because they did just sit in and frustrate us and we couldn't find a way through, and you're right, it ends up being on set pieces. But equally, I think they saved the hit up. The fact that Brennan Johnson starts on the bench, who's their top goal scorer, said they were always going to try and throw the kitchen sink at it late on. But you're right, it was how we defended those throw-ins was edgy from the get-go. But I don't know what you do with that. I mean, obviously, ultimately, headed away a bit further.
See, I don't think you can do that. I think the way he froze them was like the looping arch. Even if you get your head on that, it's not going anywhere. It's reacting to the second ball better. That's what you need to do. They won every second ball. You might let them win the first. That is what it is. Like, react to the second ball. So obviously the second goal, when Henderson and Nunes can't decide who's marking Gibbs White and they leave him on his own, like, that can't happen. The first goal is a bit like Chloe said, just easy to score against us. It feels like we have to work really hard sometimes to score. It can be quite simple to score against us. For what it's worth, I thought the other day, our goals were quite simple goals in terms of from the set plays. Mm-hmm. Because I felt like we were playing for free kicks in the second half and corners, and they were playing for throw-ins. It almost became a battle of that, and rightly so, because they were a shambles.
I just thought we were a bit unlucky with this. I mean, I know there was a general sense of being ill at ease and feeling a bit panicky, because every time a ball dropped, particularly for me in the cop end, you have no idea where it's dropping, how far away it is from anyone. But hey, that's clearly their thing. I think it's well easier in them situations when you're so in chaos to just to react to those, because that's the way you're attacking, isn't it. But I thought we got unlucky with the goals they scored. I mean, fuck me, Nico Williams is one. It looks like a really bad situation when it breaks to him, but Andy Robbo gets over and blocks it. And I don't know, the fact that the goalie gets a hand to it, takes it completely out the way of the goalie. The second one, it's two guys that both incrementally take it further out of the goalie's reach.
I think the first one's terrible for me, because it's so easy that, like, the fella's not challenged as he gets the ball from the throw-in, and then I can't remember if it's one short pass and then a long pass, or it goes straight out there. But that's one of them where, if you imagine on like Monday Night Football or something, they'd be looking at it and going, Robertson's position should have been here. Mm-hmm. And if Robertson's position was here, he gets it properly, not just a foot to it. So that one, you know, he was probably too compact and too far over, and that's what causes that goal. So you can say, oh, he gets a foot on it, but like, he should have got much closer to it than that.
Yeah.
And fair play to Nico Williams, he takes it early. He gets it on target, doesn't he? Alisson's unlucky, because I think he probably still saves it, even with the deflection. But as he's changing direction, I think what his right foot just slips a touch, and it sort of just means he can't get his hand quite high enough.
I agree with you, the two finishes are lucky. Well, Liverpool are rubbish in the build-up to both shots.
Yeah.
That's the difference. They earn the look a little bit with the deflections, but...
They had more chances.
That was absolutely outrageous. Nearly dipped in that Brennan Johnson at the bar.
And that was the same. The overhead kick one was like three bouncing balls up where no one's dealing with it. And that happens when you panic. There's a defence. Yeah. When you haven't got trust in the other players around you. And that's where Liverpool were at the weekend.
I felt at last time, I was like, get Fabinho off the pitch and get Thiago on, because if it's going to be a replay of that, we don't need Fabinho and Henderson. And then the second we did that, I was like, fuck, now we could do it to Fabinho on here. We looked little again.
Thiago kept giving the ball away.
Thiago wasn't good.
Well, Thiago was horrific.
The sub made perfect sense, because you keep the ball.
When he came on
against Leeds, and the two of him and Trent in the middle, you couldn't get the ball off them. It was like an exhibition. When he came on against them at the weekend, you're like, Thiago, red shirt. Yeah. Red shirt, well, mate.
So we lost a bit of height. We lost a bit of, like... You'd expect Fabinho to be able to maybe deal with these dropping balls a little bit better, perhaps. So, if like actually the impact Thiago, by being poor on the ball, he's obviously going to offer you less defensively anyway. I think that didn't help the situation. It was interesting because Diaz comes on later, and I thought his substitution performance was really good and was a net positive for the team in terms of getting us out. It stopped us genuinely giving throw-ins away. We just give it to him on the halfway line and let him run, and someone would foul him or whatever. But it did feel like when Jäger made the sub that made sense, like you said, we need more of the ball, we need to be a bit more incisive. It happened at the exact wrong time for us, because it was a point where Forest were coming on to us.
Well, exactly. It was like, they got the game plans at odds with each other, whereas they did fuck all to us in the first half, and you could have just started with Thiago and had 90% of the possession and just strolled around the pitch doing whatever we wanted to do. But you're right, by the time they threw their big, like, let's have one big final swing and see if we can upset Liverpool, we didn't have the players on the pitch there to deal with it as comfortably as we would have done.
Can I ask a question really quick as well? I felt Ibu, like, I think he's brilliant. I think it's hard graft asking to do what he's doing at the minute.
Yeah.
Like, and maybe we're seeing the effects that a little bit.
Well, can I ask you, because it was something my dad posed, and he might have brought it up on the final word show. I didn't, with you already, Steve, but he's like, why does Virgil get a free pass in this system? Because Robertson's playing left back, left mid, left wing. Canate's playing centre back,
right back,
right mid. And Virgil van Dijk just seems to be able to kind of just stroll around the place. We are putting so much on Canate, and whether that's totally by design or whether it's something that could be aided by other people, I don't know.
He got into a rare battle where someone who's at least
stronger.
As equally as strong, if not stronger than him, that will rarely happen. But I felt like, again, it felt a little bit at odds with with the game plan. I'm not sure why Trent needed to still be in midfield a little bit. Maybe we could have identified a bit sooner. That's a little bit of a problem there.
There was one moment between the two of them in the first half where they had a little conversation where Trent was meant to drop in at centre half and chose to drop in at right back instead, and it made Canate kind of, he was between both stools, and when we finally sorted it out and he kind of went to Trent, what are you doing there, mate? And he went, oh shit, like, sorry. Instinctively, he was still going back into what he's used to doing in those situations.
He's got a lot on his hands, and he can't do that job, especially against a big fella like that as well. It made it hard going for him. And again, I go back to it, in the end, he was just trying to get throw-ins down there. They were giving it to him to try and win a throw-in, and why wouldn't you? It was working. The Van Dijk thing is interesting in that. I thought on the second goal, I think he's marking him like he's marking him off a corner. Like, just stand in front of him. Why are you behind him? Stand in front of him. Because if it goes over your head, it's probably going to go for a goal kick. If it goes over your head, the way you're flicking out for a corner, by standing, he let his man pin him. And then you got no chance, because even if Van Dijk wins that header, where's it going?
Yeah.
I felt like, I don't think we dealt with that situation well at all. It was interesting that I thought it was Henderson got it wrong with the Nunes thing, where he didn't know what he was doing. And that's Van Dijk, and that's your captain and your de facto third captain almost without Milner.
Yeah.
And I think that's what was a bit concerned about that one, is that they're the two fellas who are meant to get that right. They're the ones you're meant to trust to get that right. And I don't think either of them particularly dealt with that situation.
Is this a thing they've done all season long? Because I don't remember it from the game.
I know they don't defence that plays well. I wasn't aware of the long throw until I saw the first one.
Because I was going to make the point, if anyone knows the information, which I don't, of like, well, if this is like a Stoke situation where Tranmere had it, didn't he, for a while with Dave Chaloner, of like, if this is their thing, then they should show descent. Yeah, but they should be good at it, and it should cause problems everywhere it goes, because that's
game plan for it.
Maybe, yeah, perhaps.
So we should be better at dealing with it and stuff. So I don't know the answer.
But I'd be more forgiving if I thought this is their main weapon, but I don't know that it is. I've never heard
the main
weapon
was on the pitch. Brennan Johnson was on the bench, wasn't he? Which was...
I mean, they don't score away goals very often, so it's not been working.
I mean, they did sing, we scored away. How shit must you be? Or words to that effect.
I think they scored two for the first time in the 90s or something in the Premier League game away, still lost, which is mad for them. But it goes back to, from a positive point of view, and Chris said he was at odds with himself. Like, I think it's brilliant if you score set piece goals.
Yeah.
If you can identify a weakness in the other team and smell blood, fucking smell that, you know, go for it. I was saying it on the show, just try and win corners and free kickers against these. I'm not even that bothered about trying to work it around the box. Just keep the ball, keep it moving, and let them foul you or get a deflection. Because the Jota goal, the second one, is some of the worst defending I've ever seen. That's like under nines.
It was the point, like, where I was in the ground, everyone thought, he must be offside.
Something's wrong with that. Yeah, that makes no sense.
And the fact that he kind of didn't celebrate properly either, because it was a bit more of a, like, a stand there and thinking, you're like, does he know it's...
Could you go mad like a lunatic, please, Diogo, so we can all throw ourselves into it?
It was weird. It was just so bizarre.
Has a whistle gone? Why aren't they running? Even when they start, when they line up, they're in like a zigzag, so it's bizarre. Like, it's baffling. But we exploited it three times, and it could have been more. You know, they have
Van Dijk chance first half. You had the Jota backstick one where he's 2 yards
off. Clears off the line.
You had Gakpo where Nico clears it off the line. There's three in the first half,
all
from set pieces and stuff as well. We
identified it definitely. I think Liverpool were playing for
three. Well, we were chatting a bit about this on the walk back to the car, Chris. Liverpool have had a week to train, and what they've been doing is, you know, we've been trying to get new players up to speed or injured players back into the mix and all those kind of things. And this is what, when Jürgen talks about coaching time, we forget what we've lost because we've changed system as well. In addition to all this, you put your foundations in place, you start to add players to it, and you build and you teach them what you want to do. And along the way, you spend loads of time practicing the extras, the marginal gains. And we've talked about that for years, about how crap teams focus almost exclusively, just defend for the lives and focus on marginal gains, because that's all you've got time to do. And that's how you beat big teams. When you're a truly top team, you do it all. And that's the thing that no one's talked about that we've lost, is we've been dreadful at set pieces this season. We don't score enough, and we've been terrible at defending them as well. And that at the weekend felt like a team that had had time on the training ground at some point this week, or maybe the last couple of weeks, to work on some different things, and potentially Trent just feeling himself a bit more as well.
We definitely were better. I mean, I don't think we've been terrible all season. I think the last 3 months we've been terrible, but I think at the start of the season we were banging in goals for fun from set pieces before the World Cup and stuff. So again, the World Cup probably makes you think it was fucking last season or whatever. But no, I think at the start of the season, if you look up there on set-piece goals, Liverpool are still there or thereabouts for league average. In fact, they're probably ahead of the league average. So, but I think you're right. I think sometimes you don't know when they're working on set-pieces. Like, it's easy to sit here and say, well, they've had extra training time, they must have. It kind of felt like they must have.
Yeah.
That's what you're saying, isn't it? Like, I mean, it was just blindingly obvious that we were just getting into better positions, the balls were better, and it was a consistent threat throughout the game.
I actually felt we defended the set piece as well. The Throne, we had no chance. We were like, they had this thing where they were just every corner, they were just crowd and Alisson. Like they were, everyone was in the 6 yard box, all them, and Liverpool dealt with them. You know, they made first contact on him quite a bit. And like I say, I don't know how you can practice to defend against them throw-ins or what you do better. It's probably something to learn from next time, isn't it? And
like you don't leave a man in absolute, you know, a massive load of space when he's inside the area. Like that was the thing that annoyed me, is just how much space for they have for the both goals. Like Gibbs White has got not a single man near him. The reason he can get such good of a connection on the ball is because he's got no one pressurising him.
No pressure at all.
Like it's anticipation. It's knowing that.
I think it's a miscommunication as well. If you watch it, and a lot of people meme that they need a Hendo Darwin thing. I think they have a conversation about who's meant to pick him up, and then no one picks him up.
Yeah.
And I think again, I think that's what disappointed me from that one, is that's the captain of the footy club. But you know, also, like that's what he's in. With all due respect, like. One, at this point in his career, Jordan Henderson's one of his main attributes is that.
He should know what he's to do in every situation.
Know what he's doing and be able to explain to other people, even if there is a language barrier or whatever. That was the worry on that one. You're right, he should never have that much time. I mean, Forrest will say the same about the Jota goal. He had more time, but like if someone's on the pen spot getting a free shot at your goal, something's not working.
And the first one that they got, Robbo, you're one of the senior players. If you need help, organise the back four. Just because Virgil van Dijk's, you know, vice-captain when Milner's not on the pitch, doesn't mean you can't have a go at him. If he needs to move round with you, or Jota needs to come back and help you cover, scream at them. Don't just stand there and not do nothing, because then it leads to goals, because you're one-on-one and he's in that much space that he's dragged you into the penalty box and you've got out too slow. It's talk of deflection. Yeah, that's a bit lucky. But still, all the signs were there. You should be switched on and be shouting to each other to tell you where to move, where to cover the space and the people. But you mentioned that Jota goal and how much space he's in. It is still an incredible goal. I don't know why people are taking that away from him. The fact that he chests it, knees it, and then volleys it past Keylor Navas, who made some boss saves in that game as well. He was quite an animal, and he was an animal against Manchester United midweek as well. I've seen loads say, yeah, it's a good goal, but he has so much space. But to like the chest, it could have bounced off him. But he controls it. The knee perfectly.
Puts it into the right
exactly.
You could take three touches in that situation and not be perfect, and you'd still have a man on you right at the end. But he takes them so quickly and so effectively. Just one more point, Paul, on the set pieces thing. I actually think us playing a settled side helped us and probably given us more training time, because you don't have to work on those little triangles quite as much in a Kirby and stuff. So yeah, that might have had something to do with it.
Yeah,
I thought all three goals were really good for us. I thought our three goals were for all different reasons. Jota is just pure. I think Fabinho does really well, because I think a lot of the time you can just head that towards the goal and it goes over, or the goalie just catches
Jota's
it.
Jota's 2 yards behind his man, he wants it
more. He reacts first and is more aggressive.
Well, I've got it. Is he our most clinical finisher? Because that both of those goals are pure centre forward.
I called them Robbie Fowler goals on the show earlier, and that's what he is. I know it's mad because he hasn't scored for a fucking year, so you've got a caveat with that, but like, if the ball's bouncing around the box, I want it to fall to Jota.
Mm-hmm.
When he's confident and on form, like I wonder if he hadn't scored the first goal, does he score the second? You know that all plays in with him.
Yeah.
But if there's a loose ball, like if that one that falls to Gibbs White, that could fall to anyone on our team, I think I'd want it to be to Jota.
He's got a level of determination, Chloe. That when you're right, this is the thing. I think he's been fighting. He's been at odds with himself a little bit, trying to get himself back into fitness. You know, understanding his pecking order maybe in the squad, but he wants the ball. He wants the ball inside the box. He wants to put the ball inside the box into the back of the net. He's just ruthless when he's on form. And that first one, the header one, is absolutely typifies that, because
he's on his
toes. Exactly.
The thing is this is why I don't like him on the wing, because I want him in front of the goal. I want him in the space between the posts, because that's when he's the most deadly. Both of his goals came when he was inside the box. When he's stuck out wide, and his link-up play is really good, and that's why he can get into the box. But if he's stuck out wide, I think he's useless to us, because what he's so good at is getting into the areas where the defender might not identify it, anticipating the ball might come my way, being on his toes, ready for it if it happens. And he's clinical, his finishing's boss. He's not just, you know, right-footed. He can do it with his left and he can do it with his head, and we saw that. And that is why when I see him out on the wing, the first half especially, I thought, we've not really got him in the game. Aside from the one that was back post, and once again, he's found himself in the box and he should do better, let's be honest. But aside from that, you know, in it, like out wide to the touchline. I was like, he's not beating anyone for pace. He's going to have to do it by skill. And yeah, he can go on these mazy runs, but if they're doubling up on him, we're going to have to reuse him elsewhere. And once we got him into the spaces where he was able to just instantly get a snapshot off or have a little, his movement's incredible. I mean, look, the defending's absolutely horrific, but the way he runs, he's seemingly as if he's not doing anything, all of a sudden he makes that run instantly and no one marks him, no one runs with him. But he's so clever inside the area. And I do wonder what we do, because when Diaz is back, he's not beating Diaz for that spot, because Diaz offers something that is a Jurgen Klopp system. You don't look at Jota and think, yeah, he's a wide player in a Jurgen Klopp system.
I think defensively, Jurgen said this one, Darwin and Jota defends better. Like yeah. We press better when Jota plays. But I'm with you in... What I would say to Cavetta, he did play left and he still found himself in those spaces. I think being able to drift in, it's when he's got the ball out there that it's a problem. I think we're looking at the squad makeup is that, and my guess is Nunes and one of Nunes or Diaz plays left, yep. One of Jota and Gakpo plays central.
I've got a theory on this, because I slightly disagree. I think he works on the left,
yeah,
because you use him differently. I like the fact that he's able to get into there. I think if Jota's going to play on the left, Gakpo has to be up front. If Nunes is up front, Diaz has to be on the left-hand side. And that way, you know, Nunes isn't going to allow Jota the space to cut inside. Gakpo absolutely allows the space to cut inside. So I think that's what's something we might see moving forward.
I totally agree with this. I was thinking about this this last couple of weeks. Why have we been doing Jota? Yes, the defensive side of things, but I think that's one part of it. That's the closest thing to what we understand our front three plays like. Because Jota, we think of Mane as like a power runner or dribbler or whatever, but actually he's a guy who scored 20 goals a season from the left-hand side, and I don't think Diaz...
I don't think he's going to be that.
Yeah,
and that's fine. He's bossing in other ways.
Exactly. And what the point about that, about Jota starting out wide and doing his best work centrally, he was dead like Sterling for us, actually. City Sterling, good Sterling, when he was in the first season or so for us. He's incredible at arriving in the right places at the right time. He's a bit of a tapping
merchant.
Because
of all the things that Chloe's just talked about.
Exactly that. So, like, I was actually going to pose the question of kind of what does come next. But I think that's really interesting. And I thought it was actually... telling the substitutions at the weekend that it is Nunes that comes on central, because we've been like, well, what the hell do you do? Well, all of a sudden, Nunes doesn't look like he fits left-hand side for us anymore. I don't think he looks like he fits centre-forward either, by the way, at this point, but Diaz could totally change the makeup of that moving forward.
The one thing that when Nunes came on, and it was right in front of me, where Mo Salah was, obviously, for the second half, Salah started to feed Nunes in behind, which is not something that we had when Gakpo was up front. So there's just... that. This is where the player profile just makes such a massive difference to what you're playing. You're playing exactly the same positions, but what the player at the top of the formation likes to do determines what the wing players can do, and that's what got me thinking about the Diaz with Nunes, Jota with Gakpo type of thing, because... it just kind of makes sense, and it's that we've spoken about it a few times over the last sort of month. It's that horses for courses thing. Well, we've kind of got two front threes. They play the same formation, but they play completely different. When you've done 60, 70 minutes of one thing, to completely change it up and have to mark someone doing something different, it's just difficult, isn't it?
And explains why Bobby's probably thought, go on, this will do me. I'll move on, because as much as brilling, and I'm so excited.
He'll end up
still
at Madrid or Barcelona anyway.
Well, yeah, he's going to have a great career, whatever he does. So we can continue after this point, of course. But I look at it now and, okay, I would be more comforted to know we're going into next season with six for those three. But those five plus one from... God knows what's happening with Carvalho, but is it Carvalho, Elliot, or is it someone
Mason Mount, if we get him.
Mason Mount will be seven, by
I'm
the way, but Kate Gordon.
Doke's the one who's probably above Kate Gordon nowadays, and that gives you a right winger as well, a little bit, maybe.
But, go on, Clark, you go first.
So here's the thing, is I don't want to see Liverpool start without Gakpo. Like, I really love seeing him. But then when you mention Diaz coming back, I can't envision myself not wanting Diaz to start from the off. So I don't think we've got the best front three, like our best three attacking players on the same pitch at all at the same time, which we don't always need. But you always knew if it was Firmino, Salah and Mane, right, well, you're never going to get better than that. They're our three best attackers. If Nunes is on, love him, but he's not our best attacker. If we're in a game where he's only, like, we're not really doing good, we've only got a handful of chances coming our way, I don't want him on the end of them because I don't think he's going to put one in the back of the net. Yeah. Where that's where I'd want Jota. But then Gakpo to me is just I can't
but
see
where
we're
especially because it's been like 10 days since we were going. What the fuck's Jota doing? Should we consider a sale for Jota in the summer? Now everyone's like, you keep Jota and you find because Darwin Nunes is now Diaz will come back in. He'll get to me. Please, for the love of God, Chloe,
stop.
You're just jealous.
That I don't have them in my joints anymore. But he's the one next in line. Diaz will just wow us and we'll be made up because he's back. But also, no expectations.
The point with Diaz, I think that it's important to remember is. We've only seen 6 months of Diaz. So when I say Diaz on the left and Nunes up front, I'm judging it on that 6 months that he had when he came in. You know, was that Diaz to facilitate Mane and Salah scoring the goals? Is there more to Diaz's game than what we've seen already? Because you can't really judge him on this season.
Jota is in my team every day of the week and Salah's in the team. And it's up to the others to figure out the other team. And I think if you had to guess who facilitates Jota and Salah the most, for me, if it's someone playing left wing, it's Diaz. If it's someone playing up front, it's Gakpo. That's how it feels now. So it all depends on what they want. It's up to those two to win the other. For me, again, Jäger might completely disagree because he's got his own horse. And like I say, how often are they all going to be fit? Someone will be injured, then he makes his mind up for you. I was at Brighton when Ben Doak came on as a sub and Oxlade-Chamberlain was. You know what I mean? Like, things can change very, very quickly, but we're in a position, at least, hey, we've got the options for it. I still believe that two of the strikers need to be 20 goal a season forwards. Mm-hmm. I don't know, Gakpo might be that, and he certainly was when we signed him, and Diaz was becoming that at Porto, I get it. But Salah and Jota are the known commodities of that. I would get them to win and then figure out the other one.
And also,
around
there's a chance, we've talked about it before, we're judging on an incomplete picture because this week just gone is the first time we've had all of those lads available for selection, and Diaz is still being eased back
in. He's not really available for start.
Exactly. So it's unclear. There's a world where Diaz actually plays in one of the offensive eights. I could see him well doing that. Gakpo could do it too. But we've talked about Gakpo being a 10. But actually, Diaz is both footed. He loves running the people. He's got the ability to change the landscape with his dribbling skills. You could put him in there, and you tell him to play a free role behind the front three. You could, because he's more than capable of doing that. And then you've still got Jota's goals and Salah's goals, and then put whoever you want through the middle. To be perfectly honest, it'll be exciting one way or the other. But yeah, it's all starting to make a bit more sense. Jota's playing himself back into form. Everyone's made up with Gakpo. Salah's still scoring goals, even though he's not necessarily having like the Liverpool main man, I'll drag us over the line kind of performances, which is probably not a bad thing.
Though.
Yeah.
In that first half, I was looking at Salah and I thought, my God, he's absolutely nowhere near the goal. Like, he was just out wide. And yeah, every so often, Hendo would overlap him, but genuinely, he was touched tight to that line because we had Trent inside and Hendo had to do the... And I thought, but like, I want him close to the goal. And I think
Chloe, have everyone in the box. Jota, Gakpo's playing, Diaz is on.
I'm trying to build out from the back.
The second half, I don't know. The first half, I just thought we were, and it was very much because we were disjointed. But if you wanted any joy going forward, it came from set pieces or crosses. It didn't come from in play where we were just doing these nice 1-2s.
We've had so many games where teams have come to Anfield, parked the bus, or we've gone away and they've parked the bus, and we've had these frustrating, you need a moment of magic. Like, we've effectively pissed that game by scoring three set pieces. It's actually amazing when we've just made a 20 years of Premier League Liverpool have just banged their head against the walls on that. Like, so I get that, like, it would have been nice if we'd carved them open time and time again, but you just, when teams put 10 men behind the ball, you don't.
I was trying to work out how they were defending them, and I was quite low down, so I was struggling to do it, but like, on the basis, I was counting their defenders. There was times when there was six in a line.
I was going to say, it was 6-3-1.
And that's like, for all the times that we've come up against a low block, don't remember us ever coming up against six defenders.
And also,
like, do you know what I mean? That changes things, that extra body, and it makes it more difficult. So I understand why Salah's probably pulling a little bit wider, because mm-hmm. there ain't no space anywhere else. Mm-hmm. I still get your point. I still want to see him in the box, but when he's in the box, he scores the goal.
You've got to find a wide variety of ways to win football matches, haven't you? And we haven't this season. We more often than not, we've just capitulated or drawn.
What did you think of the Trent thing where they did? My Mark, I'm sorry to go back to that, because I think that impacted the game plan. It was effectively a back six, a midfield three, of one of whom's job was to just follow Trent around.
He struggled a lot more than he did against Leeds, because he just wasn't given the freedom of the
thing. And then when
he was annoyed with the centre halves at times throughout the game. I saw him talking to him at times, and he was like, just give me the ball anyway. He's like, yeah, I know he's near me, but we've got to change the angles type of conversation. And I think sometimes he just wanted the trust from the centre halves.
There was also, in the first half, when he did find the pocket of space, he was only just inside their half, but I remember specifically a ball was on the left-hand side with our centre-halves, and the ball just should have been inside straight away to Trent, and there was the pace that we needed. We injected absolutely no pace into anything in that first half, and that was the ball that we needed to do. And for the first man, someone had slightly dropped off him. He had a little bit where he could turn, and he absolutely fumed, because instead they went back. And he was like, you had a chance to just slip me in there. I was in space. Yeah, it was a pass that he should have done. He didn't want to use his left foot, whoever it was. They wanted to use the foot that they favoured, and they didn't. And he was livid with it, because for the one time in that first half, he was able to get on the half turn, and he was frustrated because there was no energy. There was no, let's speed it up. And that's ultimately why also we weren't quick enough on the ball in the first half.
The one time we injected pace into the game was when Trent went through and he just got his touch wrong. Yeah. That was the first time when Liverpool moved the ball.
I'd forgotten about that as well.
We moved the ball quickly. We were far too slow, you're right. Yeah. We were far too slow with everything we did. I haven't got no problem with Salah touching it because he's got six defenders. I've got no problem getting it to him, but it's got to go. It's got to keep moving. Yeah. And there was too many times. I think Henderson was guilty of it. I think Curtis Jones was guilty of it, and Ibu Konate in particular. The three of them were just taking far too long on the ball. I don't care what you do in that situation, do it quick. As long as it goes to a red shirt, if it's a five-yard pass, it's a five-yard pass. I still felt like Forrest were comfortable to let Ibu have it. Mm-hmm. They didn't want Trent having it. They were like, he doesn't get the ball, and whatever we do, we'll follow.
It's a good game plan.
Yeah, and it worked out well. That's where, you know, you want to combine Konate and Matip, because someone who can go out with it, Ibu, and he did it in the second half a couple of times, and there was the one with the long ball to Jota.
There's less emphasis on him doing that in this system. That's the one thing that I think we're going to lose a little bit more because of Trent's position. It's very difficult for that other centre-half to go, oh, let's go on a mazy run. Like, I mean, no, it's dangerous, isn't it?
But they were happy for him to have it.
That's the next level, isn't it, though? I mean, like, that's when one of the DMs then immediately settles in, or Trent's got an understanding that those are the situations where actually he becomes the other centre-half. And it's tricky, isn't it? I mean, I totally agree on that. You've got to remember sometimes, well, you know, I was trying to work out, like, who are we going to sign? What are they going to look like? I don't fully understand our formation yet. I've not seen it enough to be able to understand the profiles and stuff. And these lads are still trying to find their way, to pick their way through a team. We historically are like that in the first half of games at Anfield under Jürgen. I've probably even said these words this season. I think back to us beating Huddersfield, and it was coming in half time going to 0-0. It's a bit crap. And then second half, we went like 3-0 or something. Like, but it was a piece of piss because it took them 45 minutes just to work out where the opposition are, what is possible, where can I be a bit braver, where can I do this and that. They're doing that on top of trying to work out actually where the fuck's the man I'm meant to be passing to. He's normally
well,
stood
that's
here.
I was
going
to say, it's not just Trent whose position's changed, it's all of them. Yeah. And what we're talking about there is, and what Chloe was mentioning, and I agree with, is that, like, you know, you're being slow, you should have played that ball in, but they're thinking about things as well. They're thinking about, where are they all? What am I supposed to do in this situation? So it's the forward players, it's the midfielders, and it's the defenders.
I also think, though, this season, because of how crap we've been, what Liverpool have been so good at when we were one of the best teams in the world was we did the risky pass, and we did it pretty much all the time because we trusted each other. Mm-hmm. We knew we could do the pass, and yet it was risky, but when it worked, you were in and you were all over them. Now no one wants to be blamed because there's so many individual errors in this team. No one wants to choose the risky pass because if it does get intercepted and lead to a goal, it's all on you and you get the blame.
Fans like Trider, to be fair.
But like that is also what we miss. We've gone from the beginning of the season, I think everyone trusted each other far too much because like no one was capable of doing the things, even though like you'd give him a ball with a man on and you'd just be, he's sad, he's Thiago, but you'd be like, no, we're not that team right now. We've got no confidence. Now it's the opposite way because of how bad we've been and the individual errors. No one wants to do the risky pass because it could go horribly wrong.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's what, again, we're playing against our expectation in the stands as well, aren't we? Because it doesn't take much for everyone to go, oh, all right, it's the full off. Because, yeah, there's a collective damage amongst the players on the pitch and the people in the stands of thinking, oh, God, this is going to all come apart at any given moment. And that was actually the thing that I thought was encouraging, because as much as we've found a way to reboot this team in the last week or two that's made us a bit more creative, it's made us a bit more resilient in a number of different ways, but actually, what we probably could have stuck out with what we had got with 4-3-3 or whatever, because now we've got all the attacking lads, all the money that got spent on this team got spent in making sure we'd refreshed and revitalised the attack, and now we've got it, and I've just got this, hopefully we can collect, because we're going to need more than just goals to get through this. But I think, again, it was the thing I said in the post-match stuff, if we'd had Diaz available for the whole season in addition to, and then had the Gakpo in January, I think we'd be higher up the table naturally, because all the weight of responsibility's gone on the lads who were creaking anyway, and the ones we were bought to take that responsibility off literally haven't been able to get on the pitch. So we've got goals on the side, is what I'm saying. We might be able to paper over a few cracks a bit more easily till the end of the season. But we'll have to see. At least it's exciting. At least the idea of, let's see some more Diaz, let's see some more Jota, let's see some more Nunes can be our focus now for the next month, as opposed to worrying about every little aspect.
Do you think if Trent gets pretty much voided out of a game like he did because he got man-marked for a lot of it, is there any way he goes back to right-back and then you go back to the normal formation, you give them something else to think about, whether it's only with 20 to go?
I said this on last week's podcast. I said that's exactly what I think you should do. If you're struggling with it and you've got a man-marker, okay, mate, you're man-marking me, let's go right-back.
Yeah.
Big space in the middle of the park.
I think when you've got Thiago on the pitch, I think that makes that easier, because you've still got someone who's going to play some progressive passes in the midfield. Whereas, yeah, if Trent's your sole playmaker, that might do you in a little bit. But interesting stuff anyway. Elite Six has sent us a super chat while we've been chatting. Love that we've found goal scoring form. I can't help but feel Nunes, hair down and free, would automatically win us the lot. No stopping that sexy Blair.
I don't know, you know, mate, he feels like he's stopping himself a little bit at times. Like,
yeah,
he missed a header, didn't he? On the
Jesus Christ. He feels a little bit square peg round hole in this system. I'm not sure where he plays.
I don't know. I think when you look at City's system, they found a way to get Haaland working, so it's clearly obvious that you can get a lad whose thing is, I'm just going to get into the penalty area, working in a system like this.
That's Jota, isn't it? I'm not sure that's Darwin.
No, I think it is Darwin. I do. I think I'm not ready to write Darwin off in this system. Like,
no, stop writing him off, Steve.
He's had about 20 minutes in it. Like, Annie, he's had 20 minutes.
He's, what I would say is that there was before the Leeds game, there was a lot of, where's Nunes? Well, the lad who's replaced him has just scored 4-2.
Yeah. Good. It takes the pressure off him, though, isn't it?
Yeah.
Said this in the summer, he was never ready to be Liverpool's main man. We had to buy him a season early, or risk all of a sudden we're getting into this transfer window coming knowing we need to go and buy someone, and the best centre forwards have already moved. You know, we saw it already. Vlahovic had already moved to Juventus. Erling Haaland was moving on to Manchester City and so on and so forth. So we've obviously done it. There's a long career ahead of him. Klopp spoke about him this week, didn't he? He said he doesn't speak English very well, so that's been a bit of a barrier. We're working on that. He kind of made reference to this whole idea that Darwin Nunes, he's got a decent return. I think we can all look at that. You know, I think I said this a couple of weeks ago. He'll outscore Mane his first season at Liverpool this season. And if you were going on that as a basis, I think that's a pretty solid one. If you're going on it, he's our main man, number nine, leading the line, I think it's been a bit disappointing, but he hasn't. And we haven't used him that way, and he has been a bit in and out of the side. So hopefully Jota being back in the goals, Gakpo fit, and Salah scoring, Diaz back to get everyone salivating again, Nunes can just go about being a Liverpool player for a bit, as opposed to like he's Erling Haaland's direct comparison as the best striker in the league. Fuck that, he's not. It's not, and it's unfair that he's ended up in that kind of boat. Let him just adapt. And if he doesn't adapt, well, fuck him off.
Does he get the number 9 shirt next season?
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number smart beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number 1 in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number limited edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Life is full of awesome what ifs, and some not so much, like unexpected medical costs. That's why United Healthcare provides Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans to supplement your primary plan and help manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Oh, I think he'll ask for it.
Either.
He should. I think he should. I don't know.
Oh, you don't like that.
I want him to do a bit more before he asks.
No, I get it. I get it. It's just number 9 will be available.
Can't give
it
to Jota because the song's fucked then, isn't it? Well, oh, he wears the number 9.
Yeah. Well, he'll definitely move to the Tardis.
Version, you'll go back to that one.
Yeah, he listens to he plays for Liverpool, can get in the bin. It's the worst, terrible scanning of words into a song. Yeah. Liverpool's number 9. We know that works. Right, cool. Anyway, that was that. We're going to take a very short break, then we're going to look ahead to midweek action, Liverpool versus David Moyes' West Ham United. Stay tuned.
Hey, stop what you're doing right now. Prepare yourself, prepare your family, prepare your kids, prepare your babysitters, because on Friday the 5th of May, we are having a quiz night, party night at Hotel Anfield, and the tickets are available right now, but your time to get them is running very, very short. If you like Liverpool trivia, if you like Liverpool songs, if you like just laughter and happiness in your life, then come down to Hotel Anfield on Friday the 5th of May. The tickets are available right now on Ticket Quarter. The link will be there or thereabouts. Get involved, get your tickets bought, and come and party with us. It's going to be Liverpool trivia, it's going to be Liverpool games, Liverpool challenges, it's going to be amazing prizes on offer, and Dave Jaggs from the Ragamuffins is going to be playing live music as well. So come and join me, Chris Pajak, for the biggest party night in advance of the Liverpool Brentford game. And yeah, maybe win yourself some boss prizes, have a good time, and put some smiles back on some red faces.
Hey, it's the Bias Football Podcast.
Grudge and respect of the week. I mean, I don't know the scoreline, but if we could play the video of the time wasting, please, in the Crystal Palace game. It was 4-5-1, wasn't it?
What game is this?
I don't know.
That looks like the play in Watford.
Okay, well, that time wasting in that game from years ago.
Get out! You are the worst at this game. You are the worst. Edited 5 weeks ago.
Let me do it again. Right, so we'll just go to me. We're not going to cut this out. I said at the start of the last one that I didn't know the scoreline in the game. I will rephrase that to I don't know the game.
What game this was from?
But
is it not Watford?
It's Watford.
I saw some time wasting, which was fantastic. I've got no idea.
Right, you're bad for this game. Dan.
Yeah, Jeff Hurst for his hat-trick in the 1966 World Cup final against West Ham.
Absolutely. What a performance. yes, welcome back. If you want to join us over on the Biased Football podcast, which we record about 15 minutes after this finishes, then you can do head to redmenplus.com, sign up. It's very good fun indeed. We're going to be talking around the continued collapse of Arsenal Football Club, and more importantly, the hilarious collapse of Tottenham Hotspur. If you use the code BIASED... I mean, is it quicker? Which is the shorter show? What they did do or what they didn't do?
Ooh.
Mm. Anyway, if you use the code BIASED, B, Chloe?
I-S-E-D.
B-I-A-S-E-D. Get yourself the code, which is... Come on, Steve, shit.
If only you had a piece of paper somewhere
on
the office.
On the desk. There is.
£2 a month for 3 months.
Yeah, do make sure you spell it correctly, because Paul doesn't know how to spell that.
BIASED.
Well done.
Biased.
And get tickets for the show as well.
Yeah, and also, yeah, don't
My
forget.
God, it does smell like Lynx. In fact, hairspray is what it smells like.
Is that
like.
What it smells like? It hurt my eyes going to the toilet in that break, like.
Anyway. Can no one else smell that?
5th of May, join us live for this stuff and quiz questions and challenges.
Steve's just shaking his head. Fucking hell.
Yeah. Anyone got anything they want to get off the chest?
I'm bowling them underarm and these lads just keep missing the ball. What the fuck else am I supposed to do?
I have to make codes and you throw the paper away. I talk about the tickets and Chloe talks about links.
Can you not smell it?
Yeah, well, like, there's four people in there's like thousands of people who watch or listen to this, and there's four people who can smell that Lynx.
Yeah, just, you know, just
it's fine.
They might
we didn't have to acknowledge it, but we chose to, and now it's fine.
Now here we are.
Here we go again. What are we moaning about?
Anyone got anything they want to get off the chest? Agony rant? I'm feeling all right.
Yeah.
No.
Feel
no.
Okay.
Shout out to the Forest fans, what they were excellent, other than the banners and stuff. So.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, big love indeed. Okay, wow, there we go. No need for an agony rant.
I love. Do you know what's great as well? This completely not an agony rant, but the back of the Annie Road looks bosh, doesn't it?
Oh, yeah, they've started to put the seats in, haven't they?
Oh, but no, the outside. Have you seen the outside?
Oh, no.
Oh,
no.
It looks bosh.
Really?
It looks brilliant, yeah.
Yeah, they've got a big old chunk of the red seats gone in. You can see from the inside of the ground, so you can start to imagine, like, wow, they take that roof up. Wow, yeah, I'm very, 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 very impressed.
Speaking of red seats, I saw loads at Wembley. City was
we're going to talk about that.
Definitely getting covered on Biased. Izzy Ollier in the comments mentioning that the number 10 shirt is still available and the 8 will be available as well this summer. So 8, 9 and 10 and potentially 7 if Milner goes. So we could have 7, 8, 9 and 10 all available.
Boss that, isn't it?
Seven, eight, nine, and ten.
Yeah, no.
This is just
a
great podcast.
That's right. Just imagine looking at a photo of the Anfield Road stand smelling links.
Smelling of links.
7, 8, 9, and 10 all available is quite something.
It's a big summer, that.
Have we got anyone who's, I mean, signings, hopefully?
Alexis McAllister.
7.
10.
10.
Yeah.
Mason Mount. 8.
Yeah. We were so close to being able to rework tragedy in as a new chant there, weren't we?
What?
By steps.
Why?
Because of the numbers.
That's 5, 6, 7, 8.
I said so close.
That's a different song.
Oh, is it? Is that
5, 6, 7, 8 is a different song.
I'm so glad I got I'm so glad I got steps wrong. Because that makes me cooler now.
Five, does it though?
Yeah, I think
seven, 8. Jesus, guy.
My rodeo
my
Romeo.
My weekly fucking
cowboy guy from head to toe.
Yeah, brilliant.
Tragedy.
Outstanding. Wanta Mundea says give the 8 to Harvey.
No, thank
10
you.
10 must go to Diaz as Ezekiel Hans.
Oh, I like 10 as for Diaz, yeah. I like that.
I like 10 as I like Gakpo with a 10.
I like Gakpo.
7
10.
Diaz.
No, 7 McAllister.
He doesn't even play for us.
8
there.
Mount. Nunes can have 9.
Okay.
I like that. Yeah. Can we fast forward to the transfer window, please? The end
yeah, but that'll
of...
be fucking dead annoying as well. Like it will be.
No, that's why he said the end.
Moises Caicedo.
When everything's done.
Jude Bellingham. What's he going to be when we pull that one out?
Caicedo was brilliant, actually, wasn't he? Anyway, look, let's talk a little bit West Ham. We're going to be talking about the FA Cup semi-finals. We're going to talk about Spurs' collapse in Newcastle and Arsenal. Even though it feels like 4 years ago that Southampton very nearly slapped them upside the head on a Friday night. Biased Football Podcast. Come and join us. Anyway, West Ham. Moyes, Chris Pajak, looks like he has pulling the proverbial plane up just before it crashes into the ground. They look like they're good players, all look like what they are. That's good players. They look like a team that's focused, a team that's desperate to get out of relegation fight. And when you watch Declan Rice and Lucas Paqueta, and you see Antonio, you know, fit enough to actually play a game, and Jared Bowen on the wing, you do start to go like, why? It's mad that they're ever even really in this kind of situation.
Yeah, I think Bowen's had a bit of a struggle this season just getting on the field and stuff, hasn't he? And, you know, when he does get on the field, he's a boss player. I imagine David Moyes is a leather hat kind of pilot. I can't imagine him in a metal helmet. I think he's old school, do you know what I mean? That's what I first went to, because that's when you started doing the old woohoo.
Okay.
I was like, yeah, he's probably going to wear a leather hat. I like Moyes in a leather hat.
What the fuck are you talking about? A leather hat?
You know what I mean?
Like Indiana Jones?
No, like a helmet, but leather. Oh. You know what I mean?
Like a biker hat?
With the flappy ears?
Yeah, like that type of pilot. Oh, like, right. You know what I mean?
He puts his own goggles on.
Yeah.
Something from a 60s film.
You're flying an outside plane where he's like, not like a... You know,
yeah, like a bike plane type deal.
Yeah, not like a plane that anyone else walked off for the last
time. I had it because he's a leather cap. I'm thinking like... Is this some like BDSM thing he's got going on? Like, you know, like a leather policeman's hat.
Maybe.
Yeah. I mean, to be fair, we've had a lot of conversations in recent weeks about how good managers tend to get teams out of trouble. And Moyes, I never really truly felt like it was in doubt with them. It feels like they're riding a bit stay on optimism as well. You know, they've actually got played a lot of football lately, but they've actually got some stuff going
Europe's,
on.
Europe's not helped them, has it? I mean, I know
if they win it now, it's great.
I know, yeah, exactly. They're doing well in the Conference League, aren't they? But like, that's difficult when you're a squad as limited as West Ham's to be able to actually navigate group stages or league tables. I don't know what the fucking competition's about. To be honest, I might have to soon. That's all I'm going to say. But like that, and it's no surprise really that there is a bit of an uptick when the fixture list is less congested, even though they've still got those extra games. He's a good manager. Then they're safe, and fingers crossed. He doesn't count this as 3 points that he's going for.
It just shows you what true Premier League wins does.
Yeah.
They were banging trouble, and then they'd be Fulham, and then they'd be Bournemouth, and now they're fine. And they should be fine going forward. So in the middle of that, they obviously, you know, they qualify for a European semi final. Before that, they got absolutely slapped everywhere by Newcastle. That was the 5-1 at West Ham. So it just shows how quickly things can change in the Premier League. You go from that's because the bottom of the league, and we talked about it on bias, of course. Like, it does a lot of crap. And it's a couple of wins. We saw Villa do the other way, a couple of wins, and you fly up. That's what they've done. They had a very good win against Bournemouth. Before that, it was a squeaky win a little bit against Fulham. And it all seems sound. And the issue that you've got is that they still haven't quite figured out the striker thing. It's still Antonio, and he's not available enough for them, and that's a problem. But they have got some really good players, and you're right. The 13th, if they win, they can go to the 10th, 11th or something. That's about where given the European run they're on, that feels about right to West Ham.
And also, I think Rice over the last few weeks has taken a bit more of a leadership role in terms of attacking as well. Like, in getting forward, and sort of feels to me at the moment like he's starting to drag them over the line in games and really, really affect them.
The 13th, sort of 5 points behind Chelsea with 11th. Wouldn't be shocked if West Ham real Chelsea, because they're falling away. So the other thing, sad, and whenever we play West Ham, we saw the home game earlier this year, it was very tight. You know, there's a penalty missed, isn't there, as well, which kind of say Liverpool a little bit there. So I think it's a tough game. I think the fact that they're effectively a win away from being nailed on safe as well. So they got every incentive to go for it as well. It's almost a little bit of a freer for them. So I'm expecting a tough game. And again, it's Liverpool away from home. Like, the Leeds results aside, that's the anomaly this season. We're fucking crap away from home. We've got to make sure that we carry on.
Well, they've also had an extra game to us, haven't they? Because they played midweek last week. So they've gone weekend, midweek, weekend, midweek. We've got that little bit more break. And that's why I think this game's interesting from our perspective in terms of what we do with which 11 we pick, because I can't imagine we're going to pick the same 11 again.
Yeah, and also going back to the set-piece conversation when we were talking about the Forest game, knowing that you have Forest and West Ham on the horizon, putting a bit, if they have put some extra resources into set pieces, these are the games that you wanted it for. Right. Going away from home, it's going to be David Moyes and stuff. Their mission here is to frustrate Liverpool, you know, to stop us in our tracks if they can, because we have at times absolutely spanked them in that ground as well. And if we've got that in our arsenal, then that will, oh, well, hopefully we won't need it, but Liverpool having a quiver of a variety of different arrows at their disposal would be very useful.
Chris's point's good, because they've gone Thursday, Sunday, then they go,
and they've got a game
Wednesday, Saturday.
So yeah,
they've got a lot on the plate. You are right. So they have got changes where we should be fresh. You know, I mean, we're going Saturday.
In fact, are they? Yeah.
So we're going Saturday, Wednesday. They're going Sunday into Wednesday, haven't played on the Thursday. We never did. So you're right. In terms of energy and legs, it should suit us. We've just got to prove that we can play away from home. Leeds was obviously an amazing one. But like, other than that, really, Liverpool haven't been dominant away from home at all. And that, I think that's the type of place where you can go where if you don't start and play well, there's momentum can go against you. Their ground.
You need to burst the bubble early, I think.
There you go. Let's end the show there, lads. Well, I think that's on ladies. That's all right. We're not beating that. Pajak's cupping his ear to the fucking camera. he loves that one.
It's interesting.
It's not better than a good old dad joke, or something. No, rather shit joke.
They've actually got Crystal Palace to come for the weekend. The half 12 kickoff as well on Saturday. They go away to City. They've got United at home. They've got AZ Alkmaar in a two-legged semi. But in between that is Brentford, Leeds, Leicester to play as well.
Admiral Akbar.
Admiral Akbar, yeah, absolutely. Nice. Be careful though, Chris. Why?
I don't know.
Because it's a trap. fucking terrible. Unsubscribe from this channel right now. Unsubscribe from us right now.
Sorry, what is that from?
Star Wars.
Go away. Oh, get out, child.
Oh, Mr. God.
So what was it? They've got an interesting hand to had in the relegation fight and potentially the European place as well with Brentford and Manchester United to come. But obviously we need to take our points. Where I'm at with this, Chloe, is it is a tough game. Our away form is still absolutely abysmal, despite the fact that beating Leeds was great, certainly. We just need to get any win here. And you know, we were chatting about it in the ground at the weekend. Get this win. Do Spurs at the weekend and have a look at the Premier League table and just see what it looks like. And if we've put down four back-to-back wins, and then you get to add on, well, we're unbeaten in six or whatever off the back of that with the draws that go before it, that's a run of form, and then you can start to have conversations and start to maybe plan out a route. But we're at last chance saloon every single game at the moment. It's a pointless waste of time for us to look further down the line. It's a hell of a game to come in the weekend in the midweek. We've just got to go and find a way to get those 3 points.
Yeah, it's not going to be easy. They're obviously on the up in their recent performances. They've had big players step up. They've also got it is away from home, and yeah, I'm not too sure whether they can create an unbelievable atmosphere, but they'll be up for it because they know that if they get another win, they're safe. For Liverpool, it's just about, once again, how many times have I asked them to do this? In the first 15 minutes, be solid. Because I don't, the thing about these teams, which is why I was a little bit surprised with Nottingham Forest, is if you have a go at us, you can get at us because we're crap, because we crumble usually, and we have all season. When they sat off us, yeah, we couldn't really create much, but I sat there and thought, well, they've not really had anything. Like, all we need is, you know, one moment where they get a little bit lackadaisy or they get a bit, like, you know, tired because we've moved the ball about. Uh-huh. And one opening where we can get at them. The thing is West Ham have more clinical players than Nottingham Forest. For me, they've got better players, and Nottingham Forest scored two against us at Anfield the other day. So Liverpool just need to be solid, make sure the crowd's quiet after 15, play their own game, don't get frustrated. How many times they got frustrated over the weekend? Don't, just keep the ball moving, inject a bit of pace, and look, we've got enough people off the bench who can come in and have an effect if Liverpool are struggling.
Newcastle emptied that ground a couple of weeks ago, and I think, look, Newcastle obviously got a much greater head of steam up than we have at this point, but it's doable. You know, your point's right, because they're a couple of games from either being sucked back into the mire of the relegation, which comes with its misery, or the beach, where the season's done. Start thinking about what you're going to be doing next. it's always been a weird place since they've moved to that ground as well. Their fans just love losing their heads. We've seen fist fights in that ground, which is mad to see your own fans sitting on each other and scrapping and stuff. That's kind of what we're playing for. I don't think they're
nice comfortable seats in the home end though.
It was.
And they have got this European semi-final.
Yes,
like
exactly.
Yeah, get it head against them and let them start thinking about that. Start saving legs for that kind
what's
of
thing. What's your, you mentioned it before, Chris, what are you doing differently? If
Jordan Henderson's not playing. Things. He's had four on the bounce, has he not?
Oh, yeah. And those probably it. Jones, I think both of those lads are probably looking for a refresh, to be honest with you.
How do you achieve that?
Harvey Elliott's been just kind of bombed, hasn't he?
It's because that right wing job is so defensive minded now. I'm asking Harvey to go and be the one who fills in if Trent comes in.
Do you put him in Jones' position?
I mean, if that'd probably be Thiago, wouldn't it? I can see it being Thiago and Milner for Hendo and Jones.
This is my thing on this change of system is that it perfectly suits Trent Alexander-Arnold, but if anyone's ever played footy manager where you do all your summer signings and then you realise it's not working and you change formation and all of a sudden you've got a lot of AM/Cs in a team that plays 4-4-2 and doesn't have a single room for them. I feel like we've got a lot of lads who don't.
I think Harvey Elliott's fine for that, to be honest. I think maybe overthinking, if I'm honest, because again, you look at the way Arsenal do it, and it's Odegaard, and he plays that position absolutely fine. The way Henderson's been doing it, he's been going around the outside of Mo Salah a lot of the time.
Around the outside.
God almighty, Eminem now.
I actually enjoyed that one.
So if he's there, Elliott's used to going to the right wing anyway, and that's what Henderson's been doing. No. He could do when he gets on the pitch. Yeah, absolutely. He fucking comes out to it, walk on music. Sorry. Back again. Well, either that or he's playing Mace Welcome Back. It's one of the two anyway, isn't it? Tune, by the way. I was listening to that last night, 1:30 in the morning. I just had this inkling to go, you know what? I'm going to listen to Mace Welcome Back. And I did.
Well done.
As you do. So I think that's fine for Harvey Elliott.
What brought that back more recently though was because the smell of links, which I don't know whether I'd rather be sprayed with mace or with links, if I'm being perfectly honest.
But anyway. I think if you're gonna play Harvey Elliott there, you do need I don't know who you'd play on the left hand side. I think Thiago's probably right. I think you're probably right there. I think Harvey's fine for that other eight, to be honest. It's about Konate and it's about Trent for me in the defending.
I think I'd go with the same front three again one more time. I think I'd be looking at maybe getting Diaz in the Tottenham game. I think I'd be Thiago for Jones. I think Jones has been fine. I think he's been really good. Maybe just one. I think he looked like he was losing a little bit of energy at the end of that game. He looked a bit tired. But again, he hasn't played all season. To then go 4 or 5 on the spin might be tough. I think I'd go Milner for Henderson. I would be worried if it was Elliott. The discipline of having to get back there time and time again, you're almost wasting him doing that. You're going the other way too much.
Yeah, but the flip side is he's played the right eight all season long.
Yeah, that's true.
And he's played it to a decent level, so he's playing a more advanced role, and we now think he can't do the defensive side.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm fine with it. It's also.
If it was at home, I'd be going with you, but because it's away, I'm going with.
You play Milner as an advanced eight.
That's what we're saying. An advanced eight,
well, Milner and Hendo have been rotating, haven't they, off the bench? I mean, I'm
fine with Elliott doing it. I do worry about if West Ham are going to break, they're going to break left with pace.
It's not knowing what the deal is with Thiago. Is Thiago now in rotation with Fabinho for that other defensive midfield slot? Because if he isn't, I don't know who is.
Henderson maybe,
but it
doesn't
look
like jobs.
But that's what I mean. Henderson needs a rest. Fabinho could probably do with being rotated. Thiago coming in for Fabinho would make sense from what we've seen again off the bench in the last couple of games, and that leaves you with you're just limited to what we've got left, really, aren't you? You know, you could put I think Elliott could do either of those. You know, I could come in for Jones or for Henderson. I wonder whether you'd ask Henderson to go maybe just go again for another 60 and I've done this, so maybe you just swap Elliott in for
Saturday, something. Wednesday night's a big gap for him. Not really, that's as long, big a gap as you really.
But he's 10 though, and he gets injured when he plays loads of
games.
No,
I'm with you. My biggest concern is, are we going to be in that fucking white kit?
Yep, we are.
Yeah, that's horrendous, isn't it? That's bad.
Well, you've got to change that at some point. it's too dark. They'll probably say clashes with West, which is stupid because it's green and they don't play in green.
That's my main concern. Rather who plays.
Well, I wasn't worried about that. Now I am.
Don't be stupid.
Such a clatter.
It's just a fucking kit. It's fine.
Tell that to all the games we've lost.
Oh, right, yeah.
To be fair, every away game, so that's why we're losing it. It's being away from home. It's not the kids' fault. It's the fucking crap lads in it. I mean, we're not in that field. That's the point. Yeah, that's been the bigger
problem. I think the big thing we got going for us in this one is it's having the options off the bench. We talked about it earlier. They haven't got an incredibly deep squad. The best lads that they've got will have played a lot of football at this point in the game. In terms of who started at the weekend, talked about it before, Paqueta, Rice, Suchek, Antonio, Bowen will all likely start this game again. But we're getting to, you know, in terms of what they did off the bench, they're bringing on Matheus Vinha, Kiefer Moore, I mean, I've never heard of Jaden Anthony, Dango Tara.
Just mixed two manks up there.
No, he's been the Bournemouth team.
Oh, well, yes. Danny Ings is a good player. Yeah, I thought that was weird. Sorry, tell that. They brought on Maxwell Cornet, who's a good
kid,
player.
And Danny Ings, you just get confused as to what club he's at.
That's funny.
That's my bad.
They brought Fornals, Ings, and
they brought Cornet, Ings on. So obviously they've got some decent players. But has been able
Fornals
to bring.
Fornals scored.
It was
Diaz.
A good header as well, I think.
Yeah, being able to bring Diaz on, being able to bring Darwin Nunes on, and then whoever else is on the bench in terms of the midfield. Hopefully we've got that bit more firepower if we need to go deep in the game. Because let's be honest, if West Ham are forced to bring on Bournemouth players, to that team, I mean, I'm not sure how your game plan for that, if I'm being perfectly honest.
They're in dire straits when they're bringing Kiefer Moore off the opposition's benches and bring again.
Yeah.
That's funny,
what do we think? Score predictions for this one, Steve?
2-1.
I was going to say 2-1, but I'll go 3-1.
1-0 Liverpool.
2-0. Goal in either half. Well, late first half.
Who's getting the goals?
Bournemouth players.
No, well, who did we play at the weekend? Forest players. I think Jota will score again.
That's what I like.
And I think Darwin will get one off the bench.
I like it.
I am still concerned because the away from home thing is a thing.
Well, as we said, though, I mean, look, I agree, and it goes like past performance is the best, you know, indicator of what future performance is going to be. But at some point, we do have to get a grip on this, or I say we won't. You know, it's
and the problem is that we might not.
Yeah, but I mean, the good thing is because of Man United getting to the FA Cup final, it means that everyone down to seventh is now pretty much guaranteed a European place. Like so.
Seventh is that conference thing.
Hey, listen, West Ham are buzzing off at the moment, aren't they? Conference League semi-final against Blackburn. Or you could have Fiorentina or Basel. As long as if we get Basel in that fucking Conference League next season.
Oh, God.
We'll find out a way to get either Seville or Real Madrid.
No, but we don't. We don't need them.
By UEFA for FFP and they'll throw them to the Conference League.
Yeah. We don't need to. That's my point, is that you just have to get Basel. Everyone forgets Basel are just as bad for us as any of those other teams. Oh, Basel, maybe this will be the time we find
it's
it.
Not gonna
it's
be
been
a
20
fun
years
game.
Since
it's
we last
not
played
be a fun
them.
Game. Yeah,
our group for some reason ends up being Basel, Seville and Napoli again. Why do we keep playing these every year?
Yeah.
Do you know, a couple of weeks ago when we were talking about how important performances were for next season, I couldn't give a rat's ass about performances. I just want the wins right now.
Yeah,
just give me the wins and let me see where we are by the
end. I said I wanted exciting football and I'm not sure I got it at the weekend.
You got stressful football.
I got stressful football, yeah.
Look,
didn't like it.
This is about building form. You're away from home. It's West Ham. They're in decent. They've finally turned into a bit of decent form. The vibes are coming back as the European run and whatever. Yeah, we're building for that Spurs game at the weekend because that's the one where you get to go and play your football. You know, it's Tottenham Hotspur. It's a big game. The crowd will be up for it. They'll feel like there's something on the line. There's more satisfaction in seeing Harry Kane with a face on, isn't there, and all that kind of stuff. That's what we're kind of playing with. So I agree. I don't really give a shit how we. How we win this one. This is one way you can win it with a free kick in the 89th minute if that's what it takes. But get us back to Anfield. Three home games on the bounce, and you'd be thinking then, because then if you're going into that, as I say, with nine points from the last nine, looking at another one from that, that's when we can start to play some exciting
Europa
football.
League, here we come.
Conference League, here we come. Whatever. Away games, more interesting away games. I've never been to Alkmaar. Been to Ajax, done it. You know what I mean? Everyone's been to Eindhoven or Dortmund and been to Madrid. Don't want to go to Madrid ever again. Nice town. Terrible football teams.
I'll go instead.
What?
I'll go instead.
Nah, it's rubbish. Don't recommend it. you can go to Maribor again. That'll be...
Yay.
Faroe Islands.
I haven't been to Slovenia. I'd love to go.
Good wine in Slovenia.
So you keep telling me.
It's good wine.
Chris Payton, the 10 wise,
excellent for white wine.
Okay, sad. Right, thank you so much, everyone who's joined us for the Originals podcast this week. Anything you want to discuss, do so in the comment section underneath. And please do come and join us for the Bias Football podcast, where we're going to rip the piss mercilessly out of Tottenham Hotspur.
Yay!
Fucking rubbish.
Did Kane get his goal?
Okay, of course Kane got his goal. So it's not his fault. Not his fault that they're in that situation.
He's a real leader's leader.
What a man.
He's a fucking
what a
knob.
Inspiration. Thank you. Yeah, Code Biased. Check us out over on redmenplus.com. If you're live here now, we'll be live there in about 10 minutes time, so come and join us over there in a bit. Bye.
Thanks for listening. If you want even more Bosch content and podcasts just like this, go over to redmenplus.com and sign up now.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. If you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. Use the Stamps.com mobile app to mail everything you need to keep your business running with up to 89% off USPS and UPS. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Use code PROGRAM for a special offer. That's Stamps.com, code PROGRAM.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hi, I'm Megan Rinks.
And I'm Melissa D. Montz.
And like every other person with access to a microphone, we started a podcast.
On Mondays, we release Don't Blame Me, which is an advice podcast where listeners call in and we share our thoughts on situations such as what to do if you're going to your boyfriend's family function and you haven't told him that you previously slept with both his twin brothers.
Then on Thursdays, we release our podcast, But Am I Wrong?, where we ethically gossip about pop culture, politics, our lives, and your lives. Listeners write in and we tell them if they're wrong or right in a situation. Are you the hero or the villain?
On Tuesdays and Fridays, we throw in a little something extra as well.
A little something, something. We strive to create a community grounded in activism, mental health, and inclusivity. Think of us as like your blunt, honest friends who give you advice that you need to hear, not what you want to hear. But we're also always rooting for your success. What we lack in credentials, we make up for in...
opinions.
We do that in every episode, too.
We're professional unprofessional, so if you're looking for a new slate of podcasts to add to your routine, we're here for you.
Acast recommends.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.